This is Viewpoint Alabama, a public service of the Alabama Radio Network, where we talk about the people, the places, and the things making news in our state. I'm your host, John Mounts, and today we're joined by one of the people that we got to know so very well during the pandemic from the Alabama Department of Public Health. Here is Dr. Wesley Stubblefield. Dr. Stubblefield, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
I'm delighted to have you on, and we've got some good news for everyone who doesn't already know it, but I think pretty much everyone does it. The pandemic is officially ending, right?
So in certain ways, yes, and in others, no. The federal government has declared that the pandemic is no longer a public health emergency, meaning that the pandemic is no longer disrupting life as it was before. And there are many factors that play into this, primarily that most people, if not all people, have either had a vaccine or the infection. Treatments and vaccines are widespread, and the amount of illness that this is causing has decreased over time. So we are definitely moving into a new phase of the pandemic from this point forward.
I've heard the word endemic used. In other words, it's pretty much, it's out there, it's everywhere, but it's because it's everywhere, people have started to adapt.
That's right. Coronaviruses, like COVID-19, are endemic viruses in our population. So we have others that are not COVID-19 that continue to circulate on a regular basis. And COVID-19 is suspected and expected to become one of those viruses that just will continue to affect our lives over time.
And that being the case, we have to adapt, just like as we did during the pandemic. We have to adapt to it being endemic because we can't just go on about our lives as we were before, right? There are still things that we need to keep in mind.
That's right. The most important thing that we need to think about as a population is who is at highest risk for severe disease. And this goes for many respiratory viruses, not just COVID-19, but we also think about RSV or respiratory syncytial virus or influenza virus. Some people will get very, very sick, and those risk factors are pretty consistent across groups, meaning those of older age, those that have underlying weakened immune systems, maybe the very young, and others with chronic medical conditions should continue to take this seriously because they may get sick, they may end up in the hospital. And we have ways of keeping people out of the hospital that include both vaccines and treatments.
I was going to ask about that because the treatments have evolved quite a bit since 3 years ago. What are some of the treatments now that are available that didn't used to be?
So we've learned so much, and science has taught us so much about this virus, and it really took a worldwide response to make this happen. But what we've learned is that we have antiviral medications that are specifically targeted to keep people out of the hospital. We have both oral and intravenous forms of these medications. We used to have antibody treatments, although none of those are currently active because the virus has continued to mutate over time. But it's important for people to know that if they are at high risk, that they may qualify for these treatments. And these treatments can be life-altering or even life-saving.
Dr. Stubblefield, another thing they always say, treatment or prevention is worth a pound of cure. A lot of us have gotten our vaccine, probably the booster, probably the second vaccine. Are we supposed to continue to be getting these vaccinations? And are the vaccinations different than what we got before, or is it more of a booster?
So the vaccines are different from what we got in the beginning. So at the beginning of the pandemic, when the vaccine was first available, it was targeted at the strain that came over in late 2019 overseas. Over time, the virus has continued to mutate, which is what viruses do to make sure it stays alive and continues to infect people. And so what we did is we added a second form of the virus into the original vaccine. So many of the vaccines now are what we call bivalent, or they have two different strains. The FDA yesterday had recommended to the manufacturers that they then change the formulation of the vaccine to go back to one form that is more focused on what is currently circulating in the United States for another fall vaccine. And it remains to be seen whether or not this will be an ongoing vaccine program like a flu vaccine where it will be made yearly. But again, for this year, we do know that in the fall, there will be another updated vaccine more specifically targeted to what's out there.
And I know with the flu vaccine, a lot of times those are trivalent, even quadrivalent. Do you see a situation maybe in the future where the flu vaccine just incorporates the COVID vaccination all into one big shot?
That is a possibility. The federal government has very strict safety and efficacy guidelines, meaning that so when a vaccine is produced or even proposed, it has to go through multiple rounds of study. It has to be proven to be effective. And this is the case for flu vaccines. The good thing is the flu vaccine is quadrivalent. Like you mentioned, it has four strains in it, but it's also been over time shown to be effective. So they don't have to do all the studies. But if they were to come out with a dual vaccine, it would have to be shown to be effective. And that might take some time. So we're still, that may be on the horizon, but we're still waiting for that information.
And I'm sure there's still people who they should consult the doctor, especially if they're immunocompromised or they have other underlying conditions. They should probably consult their doctor to make sure that they are right for this vaccination, as with any medical treatment.
That's exactly right. But what I recommend is that anyone who falls into one of those high-risk categories should have a discussion with their healthcare provider about the ways to keep themselves safe, make sure that their chronic conditions are under control, and know what to do if they do get infected so that they can, because these treatments need to be started very quickly. So having a plan in place is very, very important.
This is the Alabama Radio Network. I'm John Mounts. I'm talking with Dr. Wesley Stubblefield from the Alabama Department of Public Health. Dr. Stubblefield, let's turn a little bit to what the Alabama Department of Public Health's role was during the pandemic, and also what the role of the Department of Public Health will continue to be as we move forward with regard to COVID.
So the Alabama Department of Public Health had a wide role in COVID-19. In the beginning, we were looked upon as both a source of products for hospitals, so making sure that we had adequate masks. So these were being distributed through some of the storage that we had at Public Health and some of our emergency supplies. We also were able to respond in places in the state that became overwhelmed with patients, so particularly hospitals or emergency rooms. We were able to set up mass vaccination or testing sites. The local health department served as a place for people to come and get free testing and vaccines. We also were responsible for communicating to the public about their risks, helping some of our other agencies in developing their own policies and procedures. We don't mandate any of these things. This was all done in cooperation. So, for example, the Department of Education, helping them make that. And then also just communicating to the general public about what's going on, what's changing from CDC, how the landscape is changing, and then showing data on our website. Those were some of the ways that public health responded to COVID-19. Moving forward, we will continue to do all of those things. We are positioned to move back into those if needed, because we have those assets. But we will continue to work with the CDC to provide information to the public, to make sure that the public is educated and has a source of information about COVID-19.
And one of those things, of course, is what we're doing right now, which is continuing to educate people, making sure the information is out there and in front of people. And I know as we move forward, you don't have a crystal ball, but COVID could continue to mutate and it could become very, very mild, or it could go in the other direction, or a brand new pandemic could erupt. And so what has the Alabama Department of Public Health learned from this pandemic that that you'll use in the future?
So what we've learned is that we need to make sure that we have adequate assets in place, meaning that we have trucks, we have vans, we have anything that we may need to respond to any pandemic, whether that's pandemic influenza, which is also a possibility, an unknown pandemic. We've seen concerns about Ebola virus coming to our shores. So there are many times when we see these threats coming across, and we need to be prepared. We've also learned so much about how to communicate with the public. Because COVID-19 affected so many people in so many different ways, we had to learn about that communication takes a team approach, and it's different communication styles affect different types of people. And so we want to make sure that we are communicating broadly, effectively, so that the population can make sure that they're taking the proper precautions to move forward to their lives and keep our economy strong and our population healthy.
Is one of the challenges that you face throughout this pandemic and going forward the fact that people, they become almost inundated, they become tired because they hear the message all the time about, you know, the importance of vaccination, the importance of washing your hands, or all these other things. How do you keep the message fresh and make sure people are still responding to it so that they don't become almost immune to your communication about immunity?
No, you're exactly right. People talk about not only people have talked about long COVID and COVID fatigue, but people were just COVID information fatigued. And we at Public Health understand that because we had the same fatigue because the information that we were getting sometimes was at the same time as the public was getting it. So what we need to do is to make sure that the information that we're providing is up to date, that it's accurate, that it's actionable, that we're transparent with the public about what we're receiving from CDC, what information we're receiving from our local hospitals to develop the data to make sure that people know what's going on, that they can take clear steps. They know where to go and get their treatments and their vaccines based on their insurance and ability to pay. So there's so many things that ADPH can and continue to do, but it is inevitable that people would just sort of grow tired of COVID-19. But again, remember that there are so many people that were so affected by this. There were so many people that lost their lives, that have chronic disabilities, that were in ICUs. People were hurting, and people still hurt on a daily basis. And we need to keep those people in mind. These are our citizens, our family members, our friends.
You mentioned long COVID, and I wanted to go back and if I could broach that again with you, because there are still people out there who perhaps maybe they weren't even diagnosed, but they had COVID, they got better, but still they're wondering why there's shortness of breath or why they have these other lingering symptoms that we've come to know as long COVID. That's a real diagnosis. Are there real treatments for people suffering from long COVID?
So right now there is an extraordinary amount of research that's being funded about long COVID. Many of our academic medical centers have opened long COVID clinics to help patients move forward with this diagnosis. We don't exactly know why long COVID happens. There's a lot of theories about that, but it is real. People are suffering, and these effects are affecting people and affecting their ability to work and move forward with their lives. And what it's been shown is that it takes what we call a multidisciplinary approach, meaning that many different people need to make sure that there's not something else going on, that they receive treatments for the symptoms that they have, and then treatments to get them moving back into the right direction for their lives, their employment, their families, and just their personal well-being.
Dr. Stubblefield, I want to thank you so much for coming on with us today. If people want more information about any of the things we've talked about or other resources with regard to COVID, where can they go?
So you can always go to our website, which is alabamapublichealth.gov. CDC.gov has an immense amount of resources that's public facing, that people can read about what's going on with COVID and long COVID, data for their particular jurisdiction or their county or their state. We'll continue to host information on our website about what's going on in Alabama. But I encourage everyone to keep this in the back of their mind. And again, reach out to those that you know that are at high risk and make sure that they know what to do if they're infected.
Dr. Wesley Stubblefield from the Alabama Department of Public Health, thank you so much for joining me this week on Viewpoint Alabama.
It's been a pleasure.